Thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast. This is Lauren, and I made it to the Adulting is Easy blog and podcast, which can be found at realadultingiseasy.com and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Today, we have another Wealth Wednesday recording for you, which was recorded live on Twitter Spaces this week, May 11th, 2022. We have the normal panel. That's myself, Tom the Frugal Gay. I am Clint Murphy and Stephen Wealthy. We were joined by Chris Real Estate. And Mary jumped on for a little bit, almost as usual. We were, of course, talking about real estate and really focused on realtors or real estate agents and the role that they play, questions to ask them, what to look for that are red flags, why they're important, all of those types of things. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so I guess I will kick us off. It is about 9:02. As you guys know, we do these every Wednesday at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern. This is Wealth Wednesday. It's all about building wealth, how we've done it, answering questions, asking questions, learning from each other, learning from listeners. It's really, really a good time. We're going to go for about 9 minutes or so. And tonight we are, again, talking real estate. We've talked about, we brought a real estate agent with us, a really, really good one. So excited to kind of learn from him and ask him questions and things like that. Just as an FYI, this is being recorded and we will post it on my Adulting is Easy. I'm Lauren at Adulting is Easy, my Adulting is Easy podcast feed in a few days. And if you're interested, there will be past episodes there as well that you can listen to. We've covered tokenized real estate. We've done real estate a bunch. We did a crypto one or two. We did negotiating. We've done growing your income. So a bunch of different topics. So really excited to kick off tonight. Maybe, Chris, why don't you, since you're kind of new here, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself in like a minute or two, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. So again, first off, I appreciate, really excited to be here. I'm definitely going to be on every Wednesday now, but I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm Chris Perry. I am a realtor in the Washington, D.C. metro area. I'm licensed in Maryland, D.C., Virginia. I am, I guess, maybe to brag on myself a little bit, but actually, last year, I was in the top 3% of my entire brokerage internationally out of 95,000 agents in the top 3% in sales, almost 23 million in sales last year, completely by myself. I have myself, a transaction coordinator and an assistant. So we're a small team, but we're definitely a very well-oiled machine. And I just really honestly love real estate. As corny and cliche as that may sound, I actually really, really enjoy what I do. So I'm always excited anytime I can get on and honestly talk about real estate, but also learn from you guys up here as well too. Like I'm excited to learn from all of you up here as well too. So that's a little bit about me. I'm excited to kick things off.
Yeah, thanks. That's great. How did you decide to become a real estate agent, Chris?
Very good question. So it's a rather long explanation, but I'll give kind of the short and sweet. So I actually, when I graduated college, I started to work for the federal government. I did that for a few years. I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit. I knew that working for someone else just wasn't for me. I never want to bash 9-to-5s because nothing wrong with having one, of course, but I just knew that wasn't for me. So started kind of looking around the landscape of what kind of business could I get into? What did I think I was good at? Again, kind of as cliche as it sounds, a lot of people say this with real estate, but I knew I liked looking at houses and I knew I liked helping people, whatever that means. But that's kind of what kept coming to me when I was thinking about what kind of business I could get into. So I was looking around and kind of stumbled upon real estate. And seriously, if someone would have told me 10 years ago I'd be a full-time real estate agent, I would have laughed at them. I thought being a realtor was like super boring, wasn't for me, but for whatever reason, it popped up in my mind when I was thinking about what I wanted to do. So I got my real estate license, sold my first house, and I immediately knew this is what I wanted to do with my life. So it's kind of been a beautiful journey from there.
When was that?
This was 8 years ago. I've been licensed for 8 years now.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
you've been through a lot.
It's been a good ride. Yeah, it's been a good ride so far.
That's awesome. So what do you think makes a successful realtor? I mean, there's so many realtors. What do you think makes them successful?
Another very good question. I honestly don't know that there's one thing that will make someone successful in this. I mean, I think the thing to remember is you are in sales. That's the thing I think some people forget. They think that, hey, I'm gonna just get my license. A bunch of people are gonna start flocking to me, which doesn't necessarily happen. Because like you said, there are a million and one realtors. I think everybody listening on here probably knows at least three real estate agents. But I think the biggest thing is to go get the business. So be persistent, go at it every day. Actually, I mentor other real estate agents as well too. And I was telling this to another realtor actually today that I mentor. And too many people get it wrong that they think that their primary job as a real estate agent is to sell houses. That's not my job. My job is to sell myself, to always be lead generating. I can always sell a house. That's not the hard part. The hard part is always lead generating, always getting business, adding people to my database. So when you think about it that way, which again, I don't see most agents think that way, I think that's the biggest thing to being a realtor. It's just not going to happen overnight. People aren't going to just flock to you because you get your license, unless you're like Kim Kardashian and you get your license, which I think she did. But outside of that, it's just being persistent and always lead generating and getting business. That's the biggest thing, in my opinion.
Was that hard at first?
It was actually. I'm not gonna lie. I wish I could say it wasn't. It was hard. It was hard at first. Being that when I got my license, I was 20, 23, just about to turn 24. So I'm this young kid that has these really big, ambitious dreams. And a lot of people are looking at me like, who is this guy? He's really young. Don't know if we can trust him. He's new. So I didn't really have a huge sphere of influence at that point. So I was really kind of building from the ground up. And it was tough. It was tough at first. The first year, so I did real estate part-time for 2 years while I was still working for the federal government. And the first year, I didn't have any sales actually at all. I wasn't really taking it seriously. I wasn't running as a business. The second year, I had a few sales, and I figured, hey, if I can do this part time and have, I did 3 million my second year in sales. And I said, hey, if I can do 3 million in sales completely part time, I wonder how much I could do if I went full time. So that's when I quit my job, went at it full time, and haven't looked back since.
Oh, congrats. That's awesome. I think probably a lot of people, if they do something for a year and they don't have success, I think a lot of people would give up. So I think that says a lot about you that you're like, nope, I got to take this seriously. I got to double down. I know I can do this.
That's a really good point. Most people, I think anyone can be successful at pretty much anything they wanted to do. But most people, like you said, they just give up too quick. So I always think of my career and really life in general is it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And most people think of it the opposite. Hey, I'm going to give it, and again, I mentor real estate agents, and some of them get frustrated after 30 days of trying something. And it's like, how can you expect major results after 30 days? Or in, like you were saying, Lauren, in this case, like you've only been doing it for a year. How can you expect major results? So absolutely, you got to stick with it.
Yeah, and there's another layer to that where you're 23. You just don't, I mean, your friends probably weren't buying houses yet. You don't know a lot of people. And anybody that's older, they probably already knew a realtor, right? So, I mean, it takes a lot of work, especially being that young. So, do you work with, as you probably know, everybody up here is a real estate investor, and we've had varying degrees of success with Tom kind of like definitely killing it the most, I think. But do you work with investors like us?
I do actually. So there are some developers that I work with in the DC area, just also flippers as well. I mean, I do some investing myself as well. So a few partners and myself, we do invest as well too. So yeah, most of my business is, the retail side, regular buyers and sellers, just because that's what mostly comes to me. Like that's the people that kind of seek me out. But I do actually have a very soft spot for my investors as well too. So I love you guys. You guys are amazing. And that's where the real money is anyway. It's great being a realtor, but you guys are making the real money. So of course I work with you guys.
What investing, what real estate investing have you done personally?
So I flipped a few with my partners before. I have two rentals right now. I actually want to add three to the portfolio by the end of the year to have five rentals, and of course my primary residence as well too. Not renting that out, but so I want to have six properties in the portfolio by the end of the year. But I've flipped about six or seven homes with my partners over the past couple of years.
Wow, that is so cool. Well, I know I'm kind of monopolizing the conversation here. Clint, Tom, Steven, do you guys have questions
Yeah,
for
I have a question. We often say this on Money Twitter a lot, where it's, don't give up. Success will follow you if you keep on, pushing hard and sticking with it. How do you know when to give up, though? So I'm interested, Chris, your thoughts on that. Your perseverance paid off, and it's made you successful. How do you know when to give up? And then, Coach Clint, I'd love to hear your take on this too. When do I give up?
Oh, Steve, that's a good question. That's a really kind of hard question, in my opinion, to answer. I think honestly, the only person that will ever know, like, I think it's something innately in you that if you're not excited about it, or I mean, in my opinion, if it's something that you're really excited about and you feel like it's something that you're really passionate about and that you've only you can know if it's something that you really should be doing in life. I can't really tell you exactly how I knew, but I just knew, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I feel like I couldn't give up just because I knew that this is what I was supposed to be doing. Now, if it was something else that I jumped into and I just weren't excited about it, like how I am with real estate, then I would probably give up. Hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully I'm answering your question, but I don't know if I can say exactly how you know when you should give up, or if it's something that's just completely not working and you know, hey, I've given everything to it and this is just not working, then maybe it is time to give up, but that's really it. I've never been one to give up. That's just not really my thing, but
Yeah, because real estate agent, it doesn't work for everyone. But when it works for someone like yourself, it really takes off. And so that's why I was curious your take on that, of if you had a particular goal or time frame or a measurement that you were measuring your success by. But Coach Clint, do you have an idea of when should I give up on a particular goal?
It's a great question, right? Because I think it was Seth Godin I heard on Tim Ferriss, and he was talking about it, and it was sort of, you have to know when you should give up, right? Because we all talk about persistence and drive and grit, but at some point that persistence becomes almost stupidity, right? Because you're just banging your head against the wall and you're not going to get there. I think it's a fine line. You have to fact check. Let me phrase this the right way. You always hear me say the first thing is know what you want, right? So Chris outlined he knew what he wanted. Two, you have to understand what it takes to get there, right? Know what it takes. And part of knowing what it takes, Steve, is identifying not only the game plan, but the gap analysis. And what I mean by the gap analysis is, what skill sets do you need to achieve the goal that I want to achieve? So if Chris wants to be a top realtor, he's going to look at it and say, well, I need to improve my public speaking. I need to improve my understanding of how to understand sale values, cap rates, buying values, negotiation, dot, 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 right? He's going to have his list of things he needs to understand. And then the hard question, here's where the fun comes in. You actually have to look at it and say, can I close those gaps? Do I have the mental capacity and the wherewithal and the drive and the grit to do what needs to be done to close the gap on those areas where I don't have the skills so that I can be successful in this goal that I want to achieve? And if the answer to all of that is yes, and all that it then comes down to is the work, then you never effing give up, right? You do the work, you show up every single day. And you look at whether it's Chris Real Estate, whether it's you growing your Twitter account, whether it's some of these other people, like a lot of people will pay money to go to a course to learn how to build an audience on Twitter, right? And I took one of these courses just last week, and Sahil was the teacher, and a person during Q&A was basically asking him how he could achieve what Sahil did, you know, on that 4 hour a week plan. And it's sort of like, that's someone who hasn't reconciled what it takes to achieve what they want versus what they're willing to do. And so if you understand, like if Chris understands what it takes to be a successful realtor and he's willing to do it and he has the ability, then never give up. But if you understand what it takes, and that's the hard part, Steve, most people who say, well, I want to do X, they don't understand what it takes. But if you're not willing to do the work, then don't even start. But if you are willing to do the work, you have the ability, you have a plan, I'm not a fan of ever giving up. Back to you.
Love it. No, I almost feel like we could just end the spaces right there and finish. And that's the amount of wisdom and insight you gave there was incredible, Clint. Thank you. Tom, I want to turn it to you on this one because we've done these weekly spaces enough that I know kind of your resume. You got 18, 19, and then 20 doors next week. You've had a crack house. You've had a hoarder house. Hoarder, like, you know, not a whore house, a hoarder house. And you said in one of our earlier spaces that if you had had those as your first experience, you would have given up. So I'm curious on your take, how this weighs in with not giving up. And then what was your first two or three houses like?
Okay, so for not giving up, this is perfect because I'm sitting in my first short-term rental that I have been working on for over a year. I'm putting the duvet on the second bedroom set right now. It would have been super easy to give up when I was 100,000 in. I'm 115. I'll probably end up at 120,000 on the renovation for both the units, but it's going to look sweet. And I slept here last night, and it's the first time that I ever slept in this property. It was a great evening, and every day I make it a little bit better. And that's really where I'm at with it. And if I wanted to flip up a for sale sign in the front yard, I would get my money back. I wouldn't make a whole lot because I'm in Toledo, Ohio, and we don't have the appreciation. We have the cash flow. But understanding the difference between cash flow and appreciation is something that's very important. And a lot of people don't understand, but Toledo, I make money. I don't get the appreciation. In Dallas, I do make a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of money. And yesterday, I threw up a Toledo property that I bought in 2020. I bought it for $11,000. I put $15,000 into it, and I rent it for $795. So I can do a $26,000 investment in Toledo, and to make that $500 cash flow in Dallas, it's a $400,000 property that I have that cash flows the same amount. Why did I not give up? Because I'm stubborn. I was told to walk away from the crack house. Even the property that I'm sitting in, this was super, super, super rough when I bought it. And I can't see all $115,000 that I've spent, but every time I get here and a little more work is done and another finish is in, and yesterday I was just walking through it and I'm like, this is a nice place. This is a place that I'd want to stay. And that motivates me. Like right now, just putting the duvet on, I bought a really nice bedding set for it and I'm going to sleep. Last night was a little bit iffy because I had some sheets with bananas all over them from Target that I don't know how they ended up here, but it was a questionable night. So I've got nice bedding. I've got the air conditioning cranking. Everything's working well right now. So I'm just one of those. And you know what, Chris, I want to thank you. We kind of put you on the spot, but I found Chris because when I'm on Instagram, I'm always tagging real estate, and Chris has amazing videos that motivate me, that make me push harder. So when I did my list this morning of people that motivate me, I know Steven and Lauren and Clint were on there, but if I go over to the Instagram page, Chris is a whole different ballpark. And I swear if Chris were in a market that I were buying in, Chris would be my realtor. And that's one thing that people don't understand is how important it is to have a realtor that responds to you. Because sometimes, and I've worked with a lot of different realtors on all the different properties on the buying, selling end. And when you have a realtor that won't respond to you, you lose deals. So that's a big deal when it's, you know, a wholesale price and you need to write an offer right now, you need a realtor that's going to respond to you. So I know that didn't answer exactly what you were asking, Stephen, but that kind of shows you where I am at right now.
Yeah, love it. Chris, I need to ask you what the top mistakes are that first-time home buyers are making. I'll give you a little bit to kind of collect your thoughts on that because I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot. But I would love to know what those top mistakes that first-time home buyers are making and what we can do to avoid those.
No, I think that's a really good question. And Tom, thank you for that. Like, wow, that actually, that means a whole lot to me. I put a whole lot of, you know, people see, and I think I've 2,000 Twitter followers, but I have like 39,000 Instagram followers. Like that's kind of my thing there is Instagram. So it's, you know, a little bit different than Twitter, but that means a lot that I motivate you even a small amount. Wow. That means a lot. So Steven, to your question, mistakes that I'm seeing first time homebuyers make, man, it's a lot of them. I think lack of education, and I don't even blame, honestly, I don't blame homebuyers for that. I blame the agents for that. One thing about me when someone works with me is I try to make sure that they're very, it's probably going to sound weird. And I tell my clients this myself. I want them to feel so empowered and so knowledgeable after the process is over that they feel like they don't need me anymore. But I say that because I want them to actually know everything that's going on. I explain everything of the process with them so that they feel actually empowered. It's scary to me how many real estate agents that I talk to, and I don't want to bash any realtors, but you know, kind of like I can talk a little bit about them because I'm one myself, but it's a lot of real estate agents that actually know little to nothing about real estate. And I know this because, again, on Instagram, I get people that reach out to me all the time asking questions when they have another real estate agent and their realtor doesn't know. So I think a lack of education is a big mistake that I'm seeing a lot of first-time homebuyers making. Honestly, depending on your market, I see a lot of people that are waiving all contingencies, everything, like they're not even getting an inspection for their own knowledge, nothing. That's a big mistake too. I think those are probably the two biggest things. I mean, we're not in a typical market where, you know, you can, hey, I'll get some closing assistance. Maybe I'll pay list price. Pre-pandemic, we were even going in under list price. That was kind of the market at that point. You know, as of now, I know you guys are investors, so you kind of know the market, but, you know, everything's over list price and people think they're overpaying, but you're paying market rate at this point. So honestly, I would say just the lack of education and people waiving all contingencies are probably the biggest mistakes that I'm seeing in this market.
Chris, I have a follow-up question to that, and then Clint will go right over to you after that. Is it on brokers to train realtors that, I guess, and my follow-up question to even that is, does that mean that realtors need to be more choosy who they hang their shingle under as a broker?
Mm-hmm. So here's my opinion on that, which I think is a very good question. It is on your broker to train you, but most brokers do not. So it's on the agent to actually demand that their broker trains them. As weird as that sounds, it's really on the agent to demand that the broker trains them because they're supposed to, but a lot of brokers do not. And to your second question, yes, you should absolutely be very choosy with who you choose as your broker. And if you're not happy with them, you should leave. So the things that I tell even the mentees that I have right now is exactly pretty much what you said, Lauren, is listen, you have to demand that stuff from your broker. At the end of the day, and if anyone's a real estate agent on here, hopefully you listen to this, And it's not in an arrogant way or anything like that, but a broker needs you more than you need them. So you need to demand, if you don't feel like you're properly equipped to do your job, then you need to demand that from your broker. So to your question, yes, a broker should be training them, but most do not. So definitely be choosy with who you go with.
Thank you. Go ahead, Clint.
Yeah, you raised a very good point there, Chris, with people going in over ask, things being absolutely bonkers. And part of what I'm wondering is what you're seeing, because we probably have a lot of people on here that may have bought, maybe be considering buying. With the Fed, where you live in up here, Bank of Canada, raising interest rates, what are you seeing so far in the market? Are you seeing a slowdown? Are you seeing a little bit more reasonability being brought back to the numbers? And what are you projecting for that? And how does that change the story? How does that change how you would approach it?
Very good question, Clint. I actually did a video about that literally today that I posted on my Instagram. So it's funny you asked about that. So yes, interest rates are going back up. The thing that I want to really kind of, I tell people this all the time, interest rates are really just going back to where they were pre-pandemic. I mean, they're a little bit higher than they were, but before the pandemic, it wasn't unusual for clients. And a lot of my clients actually were in the fives with their interest rates. And that was just the norm. We've been honestly spoiled for the past couple years where rates were held artificially low. They couldn't stay there forever. A lot of people thought they would, but they can't stay there forever. So they're, of course, going to go back up to where they were and higher than they were pre-pandemic. So to answer your question, have I seen a slowdown in the market? Yes and no. It just depends on where you are. So real estate, and again, I know I'm saying things that you guys already know. A lot of you are investors already, so you know this. But real estate is so hyper-local, meaning I'll give you an example just in Washington, D.C., where, you know, I live and work and things like that. I'm sure it's just like a lot of major metropolitan cities, but Washington, D.C., the market varies block by block, literally. You can have a $700,000 condo around the corner from a $300,000 condo. It's just that's how the market is in D.C., DC is very small. Again, not sure if everybody's been there, but it's definitely block by block. So I've been seeing slowing down in certain parts of my market, and then other parts of the market are still super red hot. So it really just depends on where you are. And I think that's why it kind of goes to having a good real estate agent, because your realtor will understand that. Certain parts of the market in the DC area, sellers are giving closing cost assistance again. In more rural areas where there may be, you know, one or two offers on a house versus Northwest DC, where million-dollar condos are still getting 10 plus offers. It really just depends on where you are. But I have been seeing some slowdown with the market. But again, it just all depends on where you're looking.
Chris, you said the top mistake there was no education or lack of education with the buyer or the seller. What would be your top tip or the number one point you would want to educate them with, or thing that needs to get educated on with real estate?
For buyers or sellers?
Maybe let's do one on each, because I'm sure we have people here who are trying to sell and maybe some who are trying to buy.
Gotcha. Okay. So for on the seller side, most of the time, and I mean, I've sold homes before myself that I've owned. Most sellers just care about what's my bottom line. How can I sell it the quickest, the easiest, and for the most? So again, having someone that's knowledgeable of your market in your area definitely helps. So that way you can get top dollar. That's really the biggest piece of education that people want when they're selling is how can I get the most and how can I make this as it's not always going to be stress-free, but minimal stress as possible on me as the seller. So that, again, that kind of comes with having a good real estate agent there on the sell side. On the buyer side, there's a lot that you want to be educated on. And again, I kind of talk about this a lot, but that's why I think it's funny when people say they want to phase out real estate agents. I'm like, I don't think you want to do that, because a good real estate agent can save you a lot of money or can potentially cost you a lot of money if you go with a bad one. So I'll give you an example. I had a seller. It's a real example. I had a seller that I sold her home just about 2.5 months ago. She bought the house almost two years ago. She has had nothing but problems with the house. So I was asking her, did you get a home inspection when you were buying the house 2 years ago? This was right before the pandemic started when she bought it. And, well, no, 2020. So kind of smack dab in the middle of the pandemic. She said she didn't get a home inspection because her realtor told her she didn't need one. And she's had nothing but problems with the house since. I had never met her. I met her a couple months ago, sold her house. Having a good realtor on both the buyer and the seller side can potentially save you a lot of headache and a lot of money. She ended up coming out of pocket, and luckily I was able to get a lot of that back when we sold the house. She said in 2 years, she was out of pocket for almost 30 grand just for work that should have been fixed by the seller. So all that to say, education wise, I do think that you want to have a good real estate agent. And on the sell side, again, like, you want to start familiarizing yourself with what's the process of selling? How can I get the most money for my property? Things like that. On the buyer side, find a good realtor. You know, want to learn about what credit score you should have and all things that we can teach you. But I'm telling you, a good real estate agent is vital. Trust me, it's vital.
Can I ask like a potentially stupid question? When we, at least down here in Florida, we really need a 4-point in a lot of cases to even get insurance. How do you not have that ever? Like, I just don't understand it.
Sorry, what's a 4-point, Lauren?
I was just going to ask that.
4-point. Oh, okay. Like a 4-point inspection report. So roof, plumbing, electric, AC. Down here, they like, you're required. So you can get a home inspection that's like super detailed, pictures, all that. But there's a separate report that's called a 4-point. And there's also another one called a wind mitigation, where you can get credits based on certain roof features, things like that for hurricanes and stuff. So without a 4-point in a wind mit, I don't think I could even get insurance.
Yeah, that must be Florida specific. So the only loan, and not everybody knows this, but the only loan up here, again, this is just Washington, D.C. area. The only loan that requires any kind of inspection is a VA loan, and they require a termite inspection. Like, you cannot buy a home with termites if you're buying VA. Aside from that, even, you know, government-backed FHA loans, you don't have to get a home inspection. I would recommend it. I would never recommend to not get one, at least for your own information. But you don't, up here, you don't have to get one. It's completely up to you.
Sorry, Chris, you mentioned a VA loan. What's that?
So a VA loan is just for if you're active duty or you're a veteran. So it goes through the VA. So that's why, you know, it's technically a government-backed loan, kind of like FHA. But it's only for military, so current active duty military and veterans.
And it's like, is it like 0% down or something too?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So VA loans, as kind of a thank you for serving the country, it's a 0% down loan, so no down payment. And it's, again, only for military and former military.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom, you've had your hand up for a while.
Thank you. So basically, exactly what Chris just said, I shared up in the Nest. I got quoted, a friend of mine works for Slate, and she bounced this question off me. She's like, I know you do a ton of real estate. What do you think about this? And basically, it was like Chris was telling everyone exactly what just happened to this person. This person bought a piece of real estate. The realtor didn't recommend a inspection. And as soon as it closed, it starts falling apart. The house is splitting in half. The air conditioner is going out. So 100%, everything that Chris just said, I hope that all 31 of us in the room are taking notes, because this happens all the time. And if you get that bad realtor, this person who wrote into Slate and I was quoted on just got screwed. And I mean, I want to share my story too of the house that I bought when I was 21. because it relates. I had my friend's mom was my realtor, and she was just showing me random properties. I did not do an inspection. And right after we closed, I thought it was odd. Like a week or two, I started having water pool in the basement. And then a few weeks later, I had paint really bad peeling in the basement. And I'm like, okay, so obviously I got some lipstick on a pig. And this is what my first deal is. So I never made that mistake again. And it's horrible to say that, but it took me making that mistake to buy stuff with inspections. And, it was an expensive cost. Some of it was super simple, where I just had to redo some gutters. But some of it was quite costly, trying to rebuild foundations that were crumbling because I had so much water running in the basement. And people will not disclose true defects, and it's the burden of proof on you to prove that they knew it or didn't know it. And having an agent that will point you in that right direction is so priceless. And that's why people are like, well, do you have an agent? Are you doing this with an agent? And 99.99% of the time, yes. And I work with different agents in different states, and I gain knowledge from those agents, so I don't make these same mistakes. So I just wanted to share, because I've had a bad agent, and I've had where I have had to spend a lot of money because I just didn't do it right. And I hope that others hear, when you do buy that first property, or when you do sell that property, don't just pass off your crap to someone else. Get a good agent who can set you up.
Tom, I didn't
Absolutely.
know
And
that. I never knew that about your first place, Tom. I mean, I know you bought this first place at 21. I know you've been really happy with it, but I had no idea that you had those problems up front. That's really interesting. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
no, Lauren, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say also, too, it's important to have, and I don't know if everyone's state is like this or where you live is similar to this, but the kind of interesting thing about living in the DC area is we have three states that are very, very, well, technically DC isn't a state, but two states in a district that are very, very close. I'm talking about you could be in DC and in 5 minutes you could be in either Maryland or Virginia. It's very different in that way. So even the laws in the particular states are different in that, Tom, like you were talking about, sellers don't always have, sellers are supposed to disclose what we call latent defects or things that they know about. So if you know, hey, there's water issues in the basement, you are supposed to disclose that in certain states. In Virginia, gotta love Virginia, Virginia, they don't actually have to tell you that. It's what we call a buyer beware state, or what they call a buyer beware state. So essentially, the burden is on the buyer and not the seller to figure this stuff out. As crazy as that sounds, it's on the buyer to figure that stuff out. So the seller actually doesn't have to disclose that stuff in Virginia, as weird as that sounds. So again, that's why it's very important to have a good realtor, because not every realtor knows that. And a lot of realtors will, which is not, you shouldn't do, but they will rely completely on the disclosures the seller gives. And sometimes sellers aren't all that honest. So I just wanted to point that out too.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I just wanted to share this story. When I was, I want to say like 4 and 5, my parents owned a home and it was on a well. And so when you would like start running the water, it would be like a little bit brown at first, and then you would run it and it would run clear. And they bought the house and they're like, okay, whatever, that's just part of having a well. And then when they sold the house, the buyers sued them over that, and they had to pay them $5,000 because of that, because they didn't disclose that, because they didn't even think to disclose it, because it was kind of a feature of the house being on a well. But so that was one time where like my parents actually did have to settle for that.
So
Right
how
now,
okay, so I think it's easy to rationalize, yeah, we should always have a home inspection. But can you even buy a house today with a home inspection? Like, so many markets are so hot that the seller will always prefer the person who doesn't want or has no contingencies or conditions. All held
That's
equal,
a good point.
they'll pick the guy who doesn't want the home inspection. And so how do you buy a home with a home inspection in today's market?
That's a good point. And it depends on the seller. Some sellers don't want a home inspection, but there's a thing that you can actually do, though. So I have inspectors, I have a pretty tight ecosystem that I work with, from lenders to title companies, inspectors, contractors, pretty much anything you need. When a client comes to me, I can do pretty much anything with real estate you would ever need. So if that's a seller that doesn't want an inspection, typically the agent will put that in the notes for the listing. What you can do though, go to the showing and get an inspection done at the showing. So the way that we actually get, we schedule showings, and I'm assuming it's like this in every state. I don't know, but this is how we do it in the DC area. You actually get anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour window. So what I would do is, if you know that it's a house that you know you want to go for, then you may want to just get an inspection, and you know that they don't want to allow inspections, because a lot of sellers are. I do a lot of as-is sales with home inspections just for the buyer's knowledge, and they can pull out if the home inspection comes back terrible, which doesn't happen that often. But you can always either do as-is and still get an inspection for the buyer's knowledge. Typically, sellers are okay with that. Or you can do a pre-offer inspection where during your showing, you can do an inspection at the same time. So there's ways to actually work around not getting an inspection. I never recommend that unless, again, like I know a lot of us are investors here. Listen, I've walked through homes, and I'm sure every investor here has, that I know this is a teardown. I don't really care about an inspection because I'm going to tear the whole thing down anyway and replace the pipes and everything. So in that case, I don't care about an inspection. But if you are going to, if you're a first-time home buyer or any, it's going to be a primary residence, please try to get a home inspection, because just like Tom said, you can buy a lipstick, you can buy a pig that has very nice lipstick on it, and it happens all the time. Trust me.
No, I hear you. Clint, so Tom's doing cash flow real estate in Dallas and in Ohio. You're doing more of the appreciation with real estate in the Vancouver area there. What are you doing with agents there? Are you using them, or are you able to get around them?
Well, yeah, let's dive in. I mean, I sort of kind of bought a place last night. And a few things. One, I tend to buy most of my places from my actual company, right, where I work. So I don't need a realtor in that case, because I'm buying from the developer and I work for the developer. Two, when I wasn't buying homes that are from my developer, yeah, I had a realtor. I had, you know, I'll call him my guy. And like Bao's been working with me. Like we've had a relationship for over a decade, Steve. He's helped me buy probably 7 places. He's helped me sell 2. He's bought properties for friends, for family, or not bought, right? But manage the process for friends, family. And I think, you know, as part of the appreciation, I tend to always buy pre-sale. And what you'll find is when you have pre-sale projects or pre-sale projects, and for those who are listening who don't know what we mean, pre-sale means usually it's a condominium project or apartment project, depending on what area you're in, they'll call them different. And to go under construction, the developer has to sell a certain amount of the building. And so they'll pre-sell the building to people. They'll take the deposit, and then the bank will give them the money to build it. So I've almost always bought that, Steve. And generally, the right realtors get access to those builds. So Bao would always get me access to some pretty cool projects very early in the process, where the developers were giving you substantial discounts so that when they launched to the general public, they'd be able to show like, hey, we've already sold 30% of the building, or whatever number they were going for, right? So you'd get like 20, 30 grand off per home, which was pretty substantial when I didn't have much capital. And so I definitely used to. Now I don't as much, because I'm buying from work. And then the one I looked at last night was from work. And whether it was with a realtor, or whether you run your own numbers from a cash flow perspective, like you never would have done the buy, it feels like the exact definition of path of progress that we always talk about. Like it ticks all my boxes. And so I bought on the long-term belief and appreciation. not on cash flow or anything fixed. Back to you, bro.
Tom, you always use an agent, right?
Almost always, and the one or two times that I haven't, I've been burned. So I've learned from my mistakes and I pivot. And I have different agents. I have a few agents in Dallas and a few agents in Toledo that I work with. So I think that's one thing too, to not always be super loyal. Just because your friend or your cousin does it doesn't mean that you need to always stick with them, because sometimes they have financial gain at interest versus getting the right deal or you know, like I was just saying above in the quote in Slate, you know, that agent was friendly. The person said that agent was friendly and they just didn't really encourage getting a housing inspection. So obviously their motive was, I want to get commission. I don't really care about this person or them walking into a $30,000 nightmare. So I do. And Chris, that's not a dog at you by any means. I don't want you to think I'm bashing agents, because I'm not.
Listen, I don't take it personal. There are some, I mean, I think that's any industry, honestly. There's some really good ones. There's some really bad ones. So I totally understand. No offense taken.
Laura, do you always use an agent? I know you're building a short-term rental empire. Are you using agents as you build?
I have in the past used an agent. I have family friends that are agents. And so there were politics involved that require me to use an agent. There's also, for the apartment building that we bought recently, the 6-unit apartment building, which is half short-term rental, half long-term rental now, we just went with the selling agent. It was about 2.5 hours away, and we just thought it was easier to do that. And actually, the agent took kind of a cut of their commission to make the deal happen. So I think that really worked out nicely for us. I'm desperately in search of an agent who knows more than I do. I really, really am. I mean, people, you know, this is Florida. I have short-term rentals. You know how many people are here asking me for a realtor, and I got nothing. I got nobody to give to them. It's very, I have a hard time with it, because I think the barrier to entry to become a realtor is like relatively low. You know, you don't need a college degree. I know you have to study and take the course and stuff like that. And like Chris said, brokers want agents, right? The more agents they have, the more money they make. And I don't know how much cost there is for them to have them, but you know, there are great ones out there. I'm having a hard time sometimes when, you know, finding them. And that's why, Chris, I was actually going to ask you, like, what are some questions that investors or even people just going for their primaries or their first time homes, what are some questions that they can ask realtors to know if they're good?
Very good question. And to your point, Lauren, I agree. The barrier of entry, and we actually talk about this all the time within the real estate space. So we share the same sentiments as you guys, that the barrier of entry is too low, in my opinion, because pretty much anybody can get their license, unfortunately. And you are playing with a lot of times people's biggest financial decision ever. And people take that lightly. But so I agree with you on that. Questions that I would ask personally, I would ask to see their experience. What have they sold? Do they know your area that you're looking for? Because again, just because you're licensed, and I'll use my area, just because you're licensed in DC doesn't mean you know DC. Northwest DC, I know this may not mean much to, you know, you guys, but Northwest DC is very, very, very much different than Southeast DC, which is different than Northwest. It's different than Southwest, I'm sorry. It's very, very different, even within the same state, or in this case, district. So I would ask to see their past performances, ask to see their testimonials. I tell anybody, look me up, look my social media stuff up, look at what my clients have actually said about me in the past. Who cares what I say? I can lie and say I'm great. I think everybody would do that. But look at what other people have said about me. Look at all the testimonials, reviews, all the homes that I've sold. And you want to get past performance in that regard. Because if you're a buyer, you know, people say that buyer agents are free. They're not technically free. The seller's paying the commission. So in that case, like a lot of times my clients don't pay me anything on the buyer side. So you should get the best agent that you can. Ask ask how they negotiate, ask how they're going to advocate for you. All those things, like, you should interview who you're going to work with. Don't just take, oh, it's a family friend and she's, you know, he or she sold 5 homes. So, oh yeah, she can help me buy my home, he or she. You should scrutinize who you work with. I get interviewed all the time and I think that's great. I'm always excited for that. You shouldn't just take my word for it. Research me and look me up and see what I've done.
That's such a good point, Chris, that you're helping people make the biggest financial decision of their life. That is so true. I mean, a primary home in America is a huge portion of everyone's net worth. I never really thought about it like that for some reason, but it makes so much sense. Something that I am always curious too is, you know, do you work with investors? I like to ask that question. There's a big difference between a first-time home buyer or somebody that's looking for their dream home that's going to be emotional and pay asking or above asking or waive a bunch of contingencies or whatever, to someone who's like, nope, I'm offering this because that's a 7% cap. That's 7% cap rate and I'm not doing any different. Right. And I think it probably takes a different kind of realtor for kind of both of those situations. I don't know if you agree with that or not, Chris. It sounds like you do both.
I agree 100%. So when it comes to the developers and the investors that I work with, Lauren, you're right. There's no emotion in there with them, as it shouldn't be. It's all about the bottom line. What's the price per square foot that you're listing the house at? Like you were saying, cap rates, things like that. That's what they care about. They're not going to be living there. So there's really no there are some investors that actually do get emotionally attached to some of these properties, which is very funny to me. But for the most part, an investor is not going to have emotional attachment. They don't care. It's all about the bottom line, how much they're going to make, then they're on to their next project. So it's very much different language, and not every realtor is equipped for that. I'm going to be honest with myself. I wasn't equipped for that for a long time because I always thought investors and working with them, they were very cold, very callous. I like the warm and fuzzies that regular buyers get. It's just very much different. So yeah, scrutinize if your realtor works with developers and investors, because not all do. Some actually, you'd be surprised how many realtors don't like working with investors for that very fact that, hey, we could put in 20 offers. None of them may stick. You know, they're very much cold. A lot of agents don't like that. I love it personally. I'm an investor myself, but a lot of people don't like that. A lot of agents don't like it.
That's why I can't be a realtor. I don't think I could deal with the, where there's like, there's no numbers. Like we don't care about the numbers. We're just going to do whatever it takes to get it. I would just have a hard time. But what if you don't get your investment back out later? If you ever want to sell, I would have a hard time. Right.
I agree. It's a different mindset. Especially on the retail side. It's definitely very much a different mindset. It's different. Very different.
This is a fantastic spaces. We've learned so much here tonight. We reviewed some top tips for new home buyers. You know, an agent can help us get educated. And the contingency, no contingency tip there that Chris had for us. If you guys haven't had a chance to already, follow everyone who's up on the panel here tonight. Chris, you specialize in Washington, D.C. real estate. How can we get a hold of you if I'm interested in that area?
Yeah, so you can always, you know, reach out on any social media platforms. I'm the Chris Perry on here. For whatever reason, I think someone either took Chris Perry Real Estate or I couldn't use it, but I'm Chris Perry Real Estate, super easy to find. On Instagram, TikTok, you can reach out on Facebook. I can always, you know, you can click the link in my bio on Twitter or any of my social media platforms, and you can actually schedule time directly on my calendar. I also teach people how to make money from Instagram in particular to, I did 22 million in sales last year. Almost 18 million of that came from Instagram directly. So Instagram's kind of my thing. I teach other people how to make money from it as well too, and how to build a business on it as well. So all of that is through the link in my bio. I'm very accessible. I just, you know, I like talking to people. I enjoy these, you know, spaces like this. So feel free to reach out anytime. I would love to help.
Okay, hold up. 18 million off Instagram. That's lead generation from Instagram for real estate, right? Or
correct.
18 million from, okay, I just had to clarify that because I was like, dang, made 18 million off Instagram. How do you do that?
Okay. Oh, no. In real estate sales. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. I just needed to clarify that. That's awesome. And you're in the top 3% of all realtors in the DC area. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Was that for your brokerage house?
So it's for my brokerage. It's out of the roughly 95,000 real estate agents we have internationally. So Coldwell Banker, you know, we're one of the largest. I think by number, we're actually the largest now. But we have like 90, almost 100,000 agents worldwide. We're in almost every country and in the top 3% of all agents worldwide. So it's pretty exciting.
That's amazing. All right. I've been burning that or really wanting to ask you this question. If I'm looking for an agent, let's say I want to buy. I think most people are in kind of the buying mood right now for real estate. What's like a red flag that I should look out for? Like if my agent said this, you'd be like, nope, moving on. I don't want to deal with this guy. What's kind of the one thing I want to look out for?
Man, that's a good question. I feel like there's a lot of red flags you should look out for.
If you got lots, you can list them off and get rolling. I think it'd be great.
Okay, yeah. So I would say the biggest one is if someone feels like they're pressuring you, like not naturally pressuring you. So here's the thing that I tell all of my clients, which is the truth. And anyone that looks at the market, it's not like I'm telling a lie. It's literally the market. When you see something that you like, you should jump on it because it may not be there tomorrow. That's not salesy. That's not pushy. That is literally the facts of the market. But if you see a house and someone, your agent, you just don't feel right, like it feels like they're pushing you too much to a particular house, that's typically like a red flag to me. Like I'm very much no pressure or very little pressure. Also, too, again, if you have an agent telling you you should waive, I understand having to waive some contingencies because that's just the market. But if you have to waive every single contingency ever, that's typically like a red flag, too. Again, but I don't want to speak on other markets because, listen, if you're in Silicon Valley and, you know, California, that may be the market. You may not actually be able to get an inspection. I don't know. I can only speak on my market. But if someone's telling you, hey, waive everything, that could be a red flag too. I guess it's probably a little easier to kind of answer like what you should look for that would be not red flags. The thing I tell anyone is, number one, you want to find an agent that you're going to be talking to your agent a lot. A lot of my clients, when we're actively in the process, we're talking, if not every day, every other day. We're best friends at that point. We're talking all the time, almost every day. You want to work with someone that you actually like because you're going to be talking to them a lot. Number two, you want to have someone that actually has experience, that has actually sold homes. I don't care how long they've been in the industry, but you want to actually have a track record somewhat. And then number three, you want to have someone that you feel has your best interest at heart. So if you have all those things, typically you won't see very many red flags in them. So I guess I know I didn't fully answer your question, but I feel like when you look for the things that aren't red flags, you shouldn't have too many red flags pop up.
Well, that's a good point. You're going to be speaking with him or her a lot over the process. My brother-in-law is a real estate agent and he does really well at it. In fact, I think for a while he was with Caldwell as well. And he is always on the phone. Whenever I'm with him, inevitably he'll always have a call come in and he'll have to take it or he'll have to call someone because the deal's going through, especially right now with everything being so hot. But
yes,
he does something really cool with me. He says, show me your call history, like to me. And I'll, like on the iPhone, that's what I have. You can go on there and it can show your recent calls. And you can scroll to the bottom and see how long your call log history is. And I'm usually about a month old. So if it's May 11th, I usually go back to about April 10th or April 8th. that's just my call volume that I have with what I do for work. And he's like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then he flexes on me and he shows me his. He'll scroll to the bottom of his call log and it's 1 or 2 days old because he's getting so many calls in and out all day long. And so it shows me that he's super busy. He's super talkative and always on the phone and working with people and making deals go through. And so I don't know if that's a tip or if you could actually ask someone to see their call log history and stuff, but he always does that to me. He's like, show me your call log history. How far do you go back? And I'm like, a month, month and a half. He shows me his, and he's a day old. And he's
yeah,
always
mine
on the
goes
phone.
Back. I never actually looked at that before. Mine goes back to Monday, but yeah,
there you go.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I know. It's just like a little quirky thing that he does to me all the time. He's like, show me your call log, and I'm back a month, and he shows me his, and he's a day old. And he's always on the phone.
I still that.
Yeah,
I love that. Absolutely,
he loves it. Yeah, so you can start using that. I don't know if that. I don't know if that. I always found that very impressive with him. But having that ability, that gift of gab, really helps out with being a real estate agent. He loves. He's very social, very extroverted. Loves working with people, and that really helps him out. So I think that's a tip though: is find an agent who's very extroverted, and it helps out a ton, especially on the negotiation. Speaking of negotiating, Coach Clint, do you have any negotiation tips for us? I know you read that book, Never Split the Difference.
Yeah. I mean, oh gosh, and I got to check if that is even in my thread of threads because I deleted everything below a certain point. So I might have to rewrite that one at some point and clean it up and make it better. I love the power of using silence, right? And I think the key is to not overcommit, right? So being comfortable listening, asking questions, getting the other side, giving away as much information as possible, and then just being silent. Put your offer forward and then be silent. Just wait and listen. And if the person counters, a fun, strong one from Never Split the Difference is simply, how can I do that?
That's so good. Sorry.
And then, so powerful. Exactly, right?
Exactly.
So you just say it, right? You say, how can I do that? You know, thanks for the offer. I appreciate it. But how can I accept that? And then just go silent and let the other side do the work because people are afraid of silence. And I think you've seen, and I've worked on it more and more the longer we've done these spaces, is you use those pauses. You get comfortable making them longer and longer. And when you first start doing them, they're uncomfortable. But after a while, you realize that they're more powerful than they are uncomfortable. And so you can use them in your public speaking. You can use them in your negotiations. And you really try to put that other person back on their toes. Like I look at my boss and I've been negotiating my salary for, I started January 1, 2018. So we're going on four and a half years. And he uses a lot of silence, Steve, right?
And just, sorry, hold on. You've been negotiating your salary for 4 years?
Yeah, let me just, you know,
like,
quickly,
what do you mean,
survey.
Like nonstop? You guys still haven't come to an agreement yet?
Yeah, no, we have a long conversation. It gets heated. Provide a lot of backup and memos, and then he says, I'll get back to you. And then, you know, 6 months later, I reach out or in my one-to-one, I say, hey, you know, like we haven't talked about salary. You said you'd get back to me. And then we get in a fight because he's like, you're so annoying. It's like gaslighting, Steve. I like hand him back the memos that I've written for the last 3 years, like stapled all together with my red stapler because, you know, I'm that guy from fucking the office.
Yep. You got
And
it.
then I just go back to the basement and count the rats. And you know, I think we're getting somewhere though. I think I'll have an end result actually next month. But it definitely, like, whenever you and Lauren, and I know slight digression, but it's Wealth Wednesday, whenever we talk about sort of like early retirement and what's driving that and timeline, like that's all part of it, right? Is that all those negotiations, you can only do that for so long before you're like, all right, Clint's checked out and time to go build the business on the side and catch up to Tom. So the, yeah, I mean, we've been having that conversation for years, but he's very good at asking questions, right? Getting everything out of you, probing, 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 and giving up very little. And now I personally, not my negotiation style, right? Because I think everybody should win. If I'm buying real estate and it's someone I can buy multiples from, like let's say, you know, Chris is a selling agent, then I want Chris to know I'm the guy he wants to sell to, right? So I want to make sure I'm getting the right deal, but Chris's client is winning too. That's my approach. Make sure both sides win. And that way, next time Chris has a deal, he's like, and Chris, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like if I come in and I offer a fair price, good terms, and I'm not winning by screwing your client, I'm winning by like offering something different than the average person, but it's in a way that we all win, then the next time I may be able to get like a pocket listing. I may be able to get on the phone with Chris before he's put it on MLS, right? Like, so for me with Realty, Steve, and again, I'm buying mostly from my own company, but I would want to treat realtors really well, and I would want to treat them in a way that I'm the guy they're calling next time. I mean, Tom, you buy so many doors. Lauren, Mary, I feel like between the three of you and me, we've probably bought like, I don't know, between the three of you, like 10 doors this month. So, like, how do you guys treat realtors on the other side? How do you treat the buy process so that you get the next deal?
Well, I think, Clint, you make a really good point where there's more to a real estate offer than the price. Sometimes I think it's easy to get wrapped around the price, but there are other things too. And Mary tells some really good stories about this as well, for sure. I guess I'll let Tom and Mary answer that. And then I have a question for Chris.
Similar approach as Clint. I want them to like me, so they'll bring me another deal. Just yesterday, I was texting a realtor that I bought this short-term rental from a year and a half ago, because I told her when I was buying it, I'm like, this is gonna be the nicest one on the street. You have the water view. It's gonna be amazing. And yesterday, I was sending her pictures because we're done, and she just, I want her to bring me a deal. Maybe she has something, or maybe she sees something coming on the market. So I want to be good on both sides.
I think Mary just bailed. But you guys had good internet in Florida, or
Mary's actually about to join me in Ohio, so that's probably the real issue.
oh, that's the issue right there.
yeah, see, she's in Ohio. Don't blame Florida. We got enough without you blaming us for internet too. No, I had a question for Chris. And one of the things that I think can be really frustrating about real estate is it can be a game of telephone a lot of times, in a sense of there's me and then there's my realtor, there's the other realtor and the other party. And it can kind of take a while for communication to get through. And also, I think naturally, just like any game of telephone, things can be lost. But I've always been curious about what goes on in the middle there. Like when it's the two realtors talking to each other, like, are there certain realtors where you're like, oh, this person's cool, this person's knowledgeable, or oh my God, not this guy? What is that kind of middle part of that telephone line like?
Oh yeah, I mean there are certain people that literally dread seeing having to work with them. I know a few in my market that I literally dread having to work with when I have done deals with them. But I think that's where having a kind of again a good realtor with a good reputation kind of comes in and definitely helps, because I've gotten deals, and again, don't want to say this in an arrogant way, but I've gotten deals done from just my name, for people knowing who I am, and they know like, hey, if he puts an offer in, 99% of the time it's going to close. I've done deals with him in the past, and it was really smooth. It's really easy. You typically want to treat agents pretty well. I mean, again, especially if you're working with one that has a name, has a reputation, a good one, that can actually help you quite a bit getting deals done. You'd be surprised. And typically our sellers, again, especially if you're, you know, first time home buyer, something like that, typically our sellers will go with the offer that we recommend. Now, of course, we're going to make sure it's a good offer, things like that. But if it's all the same offers between one agent and the other, I'm most likely going to tell my seller to go with the agent that I know gets deals done. And I know that person, I know their reputation, or even if I don't know them, I know like, hey, they sell, they're going to close. So it's important. So kind of in what's in that kind of telephone there, it's a lot of it is building rapport with the other agent. I always try to build relationship with the other agent, just because again, you never know when you're going to have to work with that person again. And at the end of the day, I think we're all on the same team here. I think that's important to realize in real estate, even on the investment side. Listen, the seller, they want to sell their property. You as the investor, you want to buy it to make money on it. And both realtors want to make their clients happy. And let's be honest, everyone gets paid. So I think sometimes that gets lost kind of in translation there that, listen, we're all on the same team here trying to get this thing closed. So that's a lot of what happens with me in talking, you know, kind of the telephone there with other agents is a lot of times reminding them we're on the same team and we're trying to get this thing closed.
Awesome. Jake Russell, I invited you up here. I think you had something to add to this point here.
Anyway, so one of the great questions you can ask investors right here is just, are there any agents you hate working with in town, or who are the worst agents in town? And any agent who starts bad mouthing other agents to potential clients, to me, is just a massive red flag, because their relationship with those agents may not be the best. So it's just an interesting question to ask up front to see how kind of tight-lipped they are, how good their relationships are, if they're willing to kind of cover and kind of keep the professionalism up, or if they're willing to immediately start kind of talking behind other people's backs.
And Jake, sorry, which area are you in again?
Sold in Central Texas, and I'm now in New York City working for a real estate tech startup with developers.
Awesome. Great point there. I like that. They start bad-mouthing other people right away. It's usually a red flag. Do you have any, like, top tips for us at all, like things that we should keep in mind and or a negotiating tactic we could employ?
I try and just ask the agent up front, will you negotiate your rate with me, especially if I'm on the buy side? If I can get them to negotiate quickly on their commission without them securing something from me, like how good of a negotiator do I think they're going to be on my behalf? So I'm happy if they drop their price, but if they're not willing to get some sort of like, will you be a referral for me? Will you sign like a 6-month buyer's rep agreement? If they're just going to like say, yeah, I'll give you a percent back if you'll work with me, they're not going to go hard for me in the paint when it's time to get 20,000 off because the roof's leaking. So somebody who's willing to give it up to you is going to probably give it up to the person on the other side of the table as well.
Great point.
I love that. I had never looked at it like that, and it makes total sense now that you bring that up. Tom, you do a lot of negotiating. I think you're up to 20 doors now. What are some of your top negotiating tactics or tips that you use when you're buying and selling real estate? How many doors have you bought and sold in total now? And what's your top tip?
I think I'm close to 30 doors that I've bought and sold. I tried to read Never Split the Difference. I bought it from a closeout store for 25 cents. I kept falling asleep when I was trying to read it, and I flipped it on eBay and I got $14 for it. So that would be tip number one. You don't always have to read the books that we recommend because sometimes they're a little bit boring. I can give you a list of ones that I totally loved. And Clint, I'm not digging on you. I just couldn't make it through that one for some reason. But I do understand, you know, as I was trying to read it, I do agree with what was being said. It was just one of those that I couldn't get through. Top tips. I've been very successful being quiet. And I think Chris or Clint, actually it was Clint that said that earlier. And there's been several instances where I've made really good solid cash offers and they came back to me and they're like, we'll do it for 5,000 more, 7,000 more. And I've just been like, this isn't the deal for me. And then I've had a few times where they've come back 2 or 3 days later and they're like, all right, we can make this work for this price. So that's kind of been my method over the last 10 years. Even in a super aggressive Dallas market, I got a really solid deal. And my realtor, when he was writing it up, he's like, they're not going to take this. And it was $19,000 off of list price, but this was right at Thanksgiving, right when nobody wants to move or nobody wants to buy. And they didn't take $19,000 off, but they took $16,000 off, which was way better than what I thought it was going to be. So sometimes you just got to throw your best pitch and see what they're going to come back with. And I've had a big success with that.
Okay, so I understand that being quiet, silence, make your pitch, and be comfortable in silence. I'm not that kind of person, and it's a weakness of mine. I'm working on it. Some people, other people as well too, may not be very comfortable in silence. What can I do to be better at negotiating while still being chatty? What do I do if I can't, for lack of a better word, shut up?
Don't appear desperate, because then the ball's in their court. I mean, this kind of aligns with being silent, but when you're too chatty, you're like, oh, this guy really wants the property. I'm not going to go down on anything. I'm not going to take anything off because he's going to lose the property. So if you are the eager, chatty type, I mean, just now I'm selling a property and they came back and asked for $1,800 in concessions. And I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do $1,800 in concessions, but I'll give you the fridge. I'll give you the washer and dryer and I'll give you the wine cooler. And I really want that wine cooler because I love having wine after spaces. And they thought about it and they're like, yeah, we'll take that over the $1,800 concessions. So I guess it aligns with, don't look too desperate because they're not going to budge.
I'm sensing a common theme here. Don't be desperate. Be willing to sit in silence. We got to get away from this. But it's all making a lot of sense. Mary, I don't know if you know this, but in private DMs, Lauren has called you, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, she's called you 5-Minute Mary because every day you're buying a new property. So I want to know what your top negotiating tips are for us.
Yeah, that's a funny name. I like that. Yeah, okay. I mean, Tom has said
I've never heard her call you that. I'm just putting in that disclaimer.
It just rolls right off the tongue, right?
It does. She meant it in a very loving way. She meant it with all sincerity and like, hey, you know, she's a mover and shaker. She's getting deals done.
Where's the eye roll emoji? Hold on. I can't find it.
I know.
They took it away.
I'm going to talk to Elon about that. We need it back. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I definitely don't wait around. So it's like, okay, I can't find anything here. I'm going to go somewhere else. You know, we got to, you know, keep looking and keep going. But, okay. Negotiating tips. I mean, Tom said a lot. I think I'm a similar, I have a similar approach in a lot of ways, but, I mainly have worked with, listing agents, and I feel like you have sort of a stronger hand negotiating with that. I mean, it's a double-edged sword because they really represent the seller technically more than you, but they also really want the deal to work. So you can kind of decide, I don't care as much about these things that the seller seems to care about, but this is the thing I actually really want. And you can kind of play hard to get a little bit and kind of act like that's not the thing I really want, but it's the thing I actually really want. And then you get the thing you really want. I don't know if that makes sense, but
are we still talking about real estate, Mary?
Yes, I swear.
How do I do this? Okay, repeat that again and just give me a little more instruction on how do I execute that.
Okay, so you have to kind of listen first to what is it that the seller brings up, that what is it that they want, right? When they're selling, they will talk multiple times about what matters to them. The house that I'm supposed to close on tomorrow, so hopefully it all goes through. It looks like it is, but they were really adamant about keeping the washer and dryer. And apparently a bunch of other offers really wanted the washer and dryer. I don't know why, because you can get them for fairly cheap considering what you're paying for the house. And the other thing was that they wanted to stay in the house for an extra month because they haven't secured a place to move to. And those two things I don't care about, right? What I care about is being able to get a consensus on paying towards the roof, because the roof will need to be replaced, right? So I kind of was like, oh, yeah, that's great. Tell them, you know, I'm on board with that, right? But can you kind of put in that, you know, we're taking the house as is, but the roof is worse than we thought. So this is the concession we want on that. And they were like, yeah, okay. I don't know. So it's kind of, you kind of give them what they want first, and then you, you know, then ask for what you want. And along the whole and this was like right at the end. So we've been kind of going through this process, you know, for a few days, or I mean, a few hours really, but it feels like a while. And I asked for mine right at the end when we were like, yes, yes, yes. So you say yes a bunch of times to what they want, and then you kind of ask what you want towards the end. And you've kind of given them all these things that they feel sort of like, I've come this far, I'm right at the end, I guess I'll just say yes, because what's, you know, an extra 4,000, right? And so that's kind of what it's worked multiple times, doing it kind of that way. The other thing they wanted, like, to use their title company, right? I mean, these little things that for me didn't matter. So hopefully that was a better explanation than play hard to get.
No, that was awesome. Terrific tips there. And Chris, what's your take on what Mary has shared with us tonight on those negotiation tips?
No, I think that that's great. And Mary, I love how you were saying, especially when you have gone through the process, you've gone through the deal, and something pops up, kind of like, you know, washer and dryer or something like that at the end. Yes, people are, I rarely have sellers. Now, I do have some kind of psycho sellers. Nola had a seller that wanted to pull out for $500. The buyers wanted $500. Granted, she was making about $115,000 on the sale, but the buyers wanted $500. And I had to literally convince her to stay in the deal for $500. So some people are crazy, but like that. But very rarely will you have people that will kind of pull out at the end for something like that. But just kind of in speaking about the power of silence, I agree with that. It's a very good negotiating tactic, because like Clint was saying, people do not like that's why it's called awkward silence. Or I hear this, you know, silence is deafening. Like, people hate silence. It's awkward. People typically don't like it. So the first person, you know, kind of what we're taught, I did a little bit of ninja selling, but what we're taught is the first person to speak typically loses in that situation. So just let the silence be there. I know some people are chatty, and I'm very much that way too, but the silencing actually does work. People do not like awkward silence. So I love that that was brought up. That works so well. It's very underrated.
Clint, and then Mary.
Clint's the man.
Definitely, Chris, a triggering on that one, because you made me think of something. I had a deal probably about 7 years ago now, and I had negotiated two homes. Like, we were picking the unit numbers. The developer was a little worried about whether they could sell. And like, it seemed based on all the conversations, Chris, that it was like a done deal. with this salesperson. And then the weekend they were about to launch, people started lining up to buy the homes. And so they reached back out and said, oh yeah, that deal we were working on with you, we can't do it at that price anymore. And like, I want to say the price they went up maybe was like 10 to 20 grand a door, right? So not in the grand scheme of things, huge. But it was such a principled issue that I pulled the FU card and just dropped both deals. I looked at a slide deck the other day that showed that development, and it showed where the price was now, and it was almost triple, right? So if I bought those two homes for like 400 grand each, they're about 1.1 now. And I just, like, it made me realize exactly what you just said. Like, sometimes in a negotiation, we pick up the pennies in front of the steamroller, right? And so just learning to let go that $5 or that $500 or that $1,000 to get that good deal. Like, if I had just swallowed my pride, swallowed my ego, and said, okay, the price went up, but I'm still front of line. I still get the best homes in this project. I still get first pick. Just pay the extra 20 grand. I'd have an extra $1.4 million in net worth in my jeans today. So too often when we negotiate, we lose the forest for the trees, and learning to let go of the ego, let go of the pride, and see the forest is such a powerful tool.
Kind of, I raised my hand to basically make the same point. So it's funny that I experienced something very similar to Clint, where the very first deal we bought, we were sort of negotiating down in price. We came in at 120 and they were asking 140, and we were sort of like inching our way in. And they were adamant they wanted 130 and we wanted to pay 125, right? And they wouldn't come down. And we were like, okay, well, sorry, right? And I remember being at work and texting, you know, the real estate agent we were working with. I was just like, oh, well, you win some, you lose some. That was fun, because it was my first one. I was like, that was fun. We'll just do it again, right? And then like literally an hour and a half later, she's like, congrats, you guys got it, right? So I think that almost was a bad thing, because in my head, I'm like, oh, that technique worked, kind of what Tom was talking about, like the silent thing. And we just kind of said, okay, we're walking away. And then she said, okay, fine, right? And so then our very, it's like two deals later, we found this, it like fell into my lap magically from talking to somebody. And it was this fourplex in, Lauren knows the area, it's in Gulfport, which is this kind of like little coastal town thing. It was a block from the ocean, and they agreed on a price, and we signed the deal, they agreed verbally. And then when it was time for them to sign the deal, they wanted 50,000 more. And I was so mad about that. I just was so angry that they did that, that I wrote this whole thing of like why they shouldn't and why the price, you know, we're offering is the right price and all this thing. And they were like, no, they want more. And they got it from a different person because we walked away from it. And of course now, I mean, I can't even look at what it's probably worth, because it's a block from the beach and it's a fourplex, and you could Airbnb that, or, I mean, it's crazy. But, and so kind of that didn't work, where I was like, you know, and it was a bit of ego, and it was a bit of, I was mad that they sort of verbally agreed and then turned around and asked for more, which is kind, you shouldn't really do that. But I guess technically I didn't, you know, they hadn't signed it, but anyway. So, yeah, so that was kind of a good lesson of, okay, you have to really, as Clint mentioned, like the force of the trees of, you know, what is actually important. You have to take emotion out. So that was kind of the moment I was like, I'm just not going to allow my emotions to get the better of me, to keep it very, looking at it just by the numbers, non-emotional, what do I know it's going to happen in the future, or what I, you know, think will happen. And then, you know, still, you can still get leverage. I've still gone on to ask for things. I've still stuck to my price. So it's not, the lesson wasn't don't negotiate or don't stay silent or stick to your price. It's more like, try to understand the situation a little better, be willing to walk away, but also, are you actually getting a really good deal? Is it worth the, I mean, in this case, it was 50,000, but, you know, we have had a case where it was literally coming down to 3,000. And we're like, okay, we don't want to lose this deal over $3,000, right? And so that, you know, so because of that, the like next deal was like, okay, fine, we'll, you know, come up 3,000 because we don't want to lose it. And that has worked out. So it, you do kind of, you have to kind of lose some deals and be sad about them to sort of learn lessons of what works, what doesn't work, you know?
Totally makes sense, Mary. And I would have done the same thing. I definitely get like, yeah, it's gotta be ego. You just need to know when it's ego and when going up makes it a bad deal, kind of knowing the difference between those two things. I'm going through some of that right now with some salary negotiations actually. But so guys, it's been about 90 minutes. It's been awesome. Mary, thank you for joining us again. So awesome. Jake, thank you for your input. Chris, can't thank you enough. It's been awesome meeting you. I can't believe like I've never interacted with you before. So super excited to make a new real estate friend tonight. And thank you for sharing just so many amazing gems, right? Mistakes first-time home buyers make, red flags to look for in realtors, what questions you should ask a realtor you're considering working with, you know, what you want to look for in a realtor and things like that. And thanks for sharing your background. And of course, congrats on being, you know, the top 3% out of 95,000 agents. That's incredible. Looking forward to seeing what you do in 2022. Does anybody on the panel have anything to say before we wrap up, or should we carry on to next week?
I just wanted to say thank you again for having me. I'm honored to be up here with, you know, all of you guys. You guys are amazing, and I follow all of you. So, you know, I'm excited to learn just as much from you guys. So feel free to reach out anytime. And yeah, I'm excited. I'll be on every Wednesday now. I'm glad I found this.
Looking forward to having you. Mary's here every week too, pretty much. So that's awesome. All right, everybody, as a reminder, follow everybody up here. Next Wednesday, we'll be around at 9 p.m. Eastern. And this will be up on the Adulting is Easy podcast feed if you came in late or missed part of it in a few days. Thanks again, everybody. See you next week.